All right, everyone, I've got 9:30. I'd like to call the meeting.
Ralph Marquardt.
Has joined the conference.
Mr. Secretary's got a couple of housekeeping items.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess, first of all, if we could get, for the record, who we've got on the phone. I heard Ralph Marquardt on the phone. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Anybody else that we have on the phone this morning?
Dustin DeBoer is on the phone here.
Any others? Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, just as a reminder, we are now live streaming these meetings on the internet, sd.net, so people who can't attend can listen in. So I just ask that we keep that in mind, and one of the things we'll need to make sure that we do is that, particularly when members of the audience wish to speak, we'll need to make sure they're up at the table so the mics can pick them up and that gets carried on the live stream. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of adjustments to the agenda this morning. One, I would ask that under the Secretary's report, the election of officers item be moved to the end of the agenda. And then following the election of officers at the end of the meeting, we will need to have probably about a 15-minute executive session to hear from legal counsel on a couple of matters. I will ask at that time that you go into executive session. With that, Mr. Chairman, I think we're good to go.
All right. Do we have any objections to the modifications of the agenda as proposed? If not, we'll move the election of officers to the end, followed by an executive session at the end of the meeting. With that, I would entertain a motion to approve the December 20th, 2016 minutes, unless there are some changes.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Got a motion by Don and a second by Kim. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Oh, okay. Why don't we go ahead and do a roll call vote. All in favor, say aye when the roll is called.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt.
Aye.
Roby.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Inman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye. All right, now's the time for the commission to consider any written or verbal disclosures of conflicts of interest by current and former commission members. If any member of the commission has completed a written disclosure of conflicts of interest, the commission will consider the disclosure at this time. If any commission member wishes to verbally disclose any interest in a conflict is defined by SDCL 3-23-1. A direct benefit from a contract as defined in SDCL 3-23-1 and 2 or any other conflict with any matter in today's meeting agenda, please identify the contract or other matter in which you have the conflict of interest and generally describe the nature of the conflict. Also, if during the meeting you become aware that you have a conflict of interest with any proposed contract or other matter, please notify the chair of the conflict and generally describe the nature of the conflict. If you disclose a conflict of interest, the commission must vote on whether the matter underlying the conflict is fair, reasonable, and not contrary to the public interest. You may not participate in the commission's decision and vote on the conflict. If the commission decides the underlying conflict is fair, reasonable, and not contrary to the public interest, you may not participate in any commission discussion or commission action on that matter. If the commission does not find the underlying conflict to be fair, reasonable, and consistent with the public interest, the parties, which may include the department, may not lawfully enter into the proposed contract or other matter which gives rise to the conflict of interest. Does anybody have anything to disclose at this time regarding conflict of interest? All right. Next on the agenda, Carla, you got a couple items?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now is the time and place for the administrative hearing on the potential adoption of revisions to two administrative rules, both of which deal with speed zones. The first is Administrative Rule 70-01-0200. which deals with speed zones on interstate highways. We propose to amend subsection 2, which deals with the speed zone on Interstate Highway I-29 in and around Sioux Falls. That speed zone currently extends from the north side of Sioux Falls at around the intersection with I-90 and I-29 down to the interchange at I-29 and I-229. The department is proposing to extend that speed zone southward to include the interchange for the T exit, which is down at exit 73, a distance of about 2 miles. And that speed zone would be 65 miles per hour instead of the typical 80 miles per hour for interstate highways. The reason for that change is that the department reconstructed that segment of I-29, added additional traveling lanes. As a result of that, there's more weaving and potential for crashes or conflicts in and around that interchange at exit 73. And so in order to address that, the department is proposing to reduce the speeds in and around that area. In addition, we have received a number of public comments about the issues in that area. It's a higher traffic area. We've seen a lot of development in that area. So we're getting a lot of public comment suggesting that we need to adjust the speed in that area. That speed change is supported by the Highway Patrol. Christina Bennett is here today. She's one of our traffic engineers. She has more detailed information about the speed studies in and around that area, if the commission would like to hear that information. But that summarizes my comments, other than to say we have received no written comments to date about this proposed administrative rule change.
Just to confirm.
Has joined the conference.
65, you're extending the 65 out to T. There's not going to be a 65, 80, 65. It's all contiguous.
Thank you for that question. It is going to be continuous. We're just picking up where it ended and extending it down to the T interchange.
But basically 65 from I-90 to the T interchange.
That's right.
Any other questions regarding the this rule change?
Yes, just for education. It says that there was a 2015 study and the crash rate was 0.33 crashes per million vehicles. I don't know if that's significant or not.
Mr. Chairman, that's a question that I would refer to our traffic engineer, Christina Bennett.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the Commission. Christina Bennett, I'm the operations traffic engineer for the department and kind of coordinate and deal with all traffic-related stuff for all four regions. The crash rate study that was done, we looked at all of Interstate 29 in the spring of 2015 when the legislators decided that we would go to 80 miles an hour. That's when we were looking at crash rates and geometry of the interstate to see if there were any segments that needed to be posted lower. That's when we brought to the commission that we wanted to take the segment west of Rapid City down to 75. This segment was brought up because the crashes there do flag. They're not extremely significant, but there is a peak there that we saw. So it was enough to concern us. At that time, we decided not to propose the 65 because construction was starting on the 229 I-29 interchange there. And during construction, we were going to have 55 and 45 mile an hour speed limits and the work zone in place. Now that it's done, we feel it's the time to go to 65.
And how are these rule changes posted or notified when we say there haven't been any comments? I don't comment on a lot of things because I don't know about them.
Then it simply gets changed in the field. We can do press releases through the DOT if it's felt that it's needed. We've had so many public comments in the past related to reducing the speed limit, adding lanes, adding lighting, all of which we've kind of addressed with the reconstruction. So sure that it'd be a huge deal to the public, but we can certainly notify them through media if we needed to.
That's all the questions I have. Okay. Thank you.
Just a comment. So one of the reasons really is the reconstruction is just completed.
Yep.
Pretty much, right?
Yep.
So and
just
indicated
finished.
That it's you know there's more movement in that section now.
Yep.
So the past history even isn't necessarily completely relevant to what we're
yeah.
considering. So.
Yeah.
Motion to approve.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, you need to call for whether there's any folks here today who are making comments in opposition or opposition.
Does anybody want to make any comments with regard to this rule change? All right, we have a motion from Don. We have a second. Okay, we've got a second from Ron. We do a roll call vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Mark Hart.
Aye.
Robbie.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Lanneman.
Aye.
White.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye. Motion carried. Second rule change.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a proposed rule change in Trip County, and this involves a half-a-mile segment going through the city of Cologne. Currently on Highway U.S. Highway 183, as it goes through the city of Cologne and intersects with U.S. Highway 18, the speed limit is 65 miles per hour. The department is proposing reducing that speed limit to 45 miles per hour. The reason is because we're in a residential and business area, and having an incremental speed increase from when you're in the town and then when you leave to go onto the highway seems appropriate. We have received comments and support from both the Highway Patrol and the Sheriff's Office that they support this change. And in addition, when this administrative rule was advertised and the local governments were notified of the proposed change, we received one written comment. That written comment was from the mayor of the city of Cologne, Todd Huff. And his comment was, the City of Cologne Mayor and City Council are unanimous in their approval of the above proposed speed zone rule. We very much appreciate that the DOT authorities took our requests and suggestions seriously and that our safety concerns are being addressed. Thank you. We have not received any written comments to date in opposition to speed zone rule change. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
More of a comment. I'm surprised this didn't come up earlier. I mean, if this has been out there that long and how he goes right through town, I'm surprised it hasn't already come up at a minute rest.
And I can't explain why that would be the case.
And I don't have a question either, but a comment. And this is a very good thing to get done. And I agree. I don't know why it wasn't earlier. I mean, obviously, when you get really close, you slow down, but it just makes sense.
Do you have anything to add? Is there any accidents?
No, I had our safety engineer pull the crash rate for the intersection because it's quite askew there, too, and there were no crashes, but the speed study that we did indicate the traffic was slowing down to 49 miles an hour, so people are driving it slower. It is more appropriate to be posted lower.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any comments from the audience, either for or against this rule change?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval.
Second. Second. Any further comments? If not, we'll do a roll call vote. Say aye. Say aye.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt.
Aye.
Obie.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Dannon.
Aye.
White.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye. Motion carried. All right, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning. Just wanted to, the only item I've got for you today is kind of a brief update on where we're at so far in this legislative session. The department has completed its now statutory required briefings to both the House and Senate Transportation Committees. Those were done the first week and a half of session. We've also done our budget hearing. You may have seen some of the media coverage of our budget presentation. Our budget proposal was basically unchanged from the prior year with one exception. We did propose to reduce our FTE, which stands for full-time equivalent, or staffing level, by 12, and reduce our personal services budget accordingly. That reduction is, I would say, more of an accounting proposal than it is impacting our level of staff. Our level of staff isn't really going to change from where we're at currently. We just have a large amount of what they refer to as underutilized FTE, which results from retirements, turnover, difficulty hiring and filling positions, et cetera. And historically, that's around where about 50 underutilized FTE. So we propose to give us the budget authority for those positions that we haven't been able to use due to those concerns. But even doing that will not change the level of our staffing that we have at this point. Other than that, we have no other changes that we propose to our budget, keeping in mind that one unique part of our budget proposal that doesn't get approved through the budget process is our highway construction building. That's an informational item in our budget to joint appropriations. And the level of spending for highway construction is left to this body to oversee that. So good to have all three of those presentations behind us. We filed as a department two different bills, you might remember, one related to registration of drones or unmanned aerial vehicles or unmanned aerial systems. Made it clear that since those were already required to be registered with the FAA, you didn't also have to register them with the state. That bill has been through Senate committee and the full Senate with no votes and is now on the House side and will be coming up for a committee hearing there. The other bill that's more of interest to this body was a bill that we introduced to make clear in state law that the commission had the authority to make 100% state highway-funded loans to local government entities for the purpose of doing highway and bridge projects. You may remember a while back we did one of those to Yankton County down there in support of the Dakota Plains Ag facility. There was some question. It was very clear that the commission could fund that project. What was unclear, at least to some, was whether or not you could accept repayment for it. So we have a bill in to make that clear should the commission ever be in position need to consider one of those loans again. That bill as well, which is Senate Bill 23, has passed both the Senate Local Government Committee and the full Senate with one no vote on each side and will go to the House. A couple other bills. It's been a somewhat unique discussion so far, in that normally we would expect to see 400 to 500 bills get filed every year. Today is, I believe, the deadline for unlimited filing of bills, and we're way under that number right now. So I expect we're going to see a last-minute flood of bills. A couple of them that were other bills that we're involved in or interested in, we did support a couple of bills that Department of Public Safety brought on our behalf regarding overweight and oversized vehicles to bring South Dakota law into compliance with new federal requirements in the FAST Act. So we're helping support work on those. There is a bill introduced in the Senate that would significantly change snow plow responsibilities in communities under 2,500 population that are located on the state highway, and I think there's 154 of those communities. And that has the potential to have a pretty significant budgetary or financial hit to us if that should go forward. There's another bill. This was a bill that was brought last year and defeated in House Transportation. It was brought back this year in the Senate. Would prohibit the use of any federal funds for the I believe the wording is printing or distribution of any state map. Obviously, we use about $100,000 of federal planning funds to print the official state highway map every 2 years. We opposed this last year, and we'll be opposing this again this year. So, I'm sure there's going to be more bills that we'll be working on, but that's some of the ones we know about today. I'd be happy to answer any questions on legislative session.
It's just like on the map, so why? What's the thinking behind it?
There is the bill has been brought both years by last year Representative Bowen. This year he's in the Senate. His stated purpose last year behind the bill, and I've had very good discussions with him about the bill, is that he is a very strong proponent that we as a state are too heavily dependent on federal funding for what we do. And he has, he really has no issue with the state maps or with the DOT. This is a easy way to get the issue of federal dependence in front of the body. And that's been his stated purpose, and I'm sure it's the same issue.
With regard to the overweight and the oversight, are we less than the feds or more?
The FAST Act created some limited exceptions to the overweight requirements. Emergency vehicles, I think, is one, and frankly, I'm not an expert on the technicalities of it, but so we just needed to make sure we build those exceptions into our, and it's mainly a bill on the interstate. Is that correct?
Correct.
There was talk of a bill coming forward on the ditch mowing and all that. Has that showed up yet?
It is not, and I meant to mention that. We've heard a number of rumors about a potential bill coming, whether it was related to ditch mowing or farming of the right-of-way. It's depending on the story, you read the version, it's a little different. We have not seen that bill yet. I actually checked before I came out on any new comments, and it hasn't been filed yet. I would be surprised if we don't see that. I'm not sure what form that will take. We'll see something on that.
Any question on that? On the Loamy Fund, it really was just to clarify and not so much establish a process or...
Sorry, I should have clarified that too. It's a little bit of both. It does clarify, but it does say that the commission, if the commission chooses to utilize that option, that the commission would establish administrative rules for how that program would work.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda, Dick, do you have a presentation for us?
Mr. Chairman, it's just a comment while he's getting ready, and a recommendation of you as the chair. I do know, just looking around the room, that we have a number of people here who are interested in testifying and speaking to the commission on both sides of this issue. My suggestion to you would be, after Mr. Howard makes his presentation, do you hear from any other opponents of the proposal, and any opponents of the proposal, and then whether you choose to give Mr. Howard the opportunity to the last proposal. Just so it doesn't get confusing.
Yeah, sounds great. Mr. Howard, did you have a copy of anything to hand out, or is that your presentation? Or?
You're being handed. Thank you.
Yes, I report that's being handed out,
and a copy of the slides that you're going to be presenting as well, or not?
It's a little bit different. The slides are pretty much follow this. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. We appreciate having the opportunity to discuss this proposal in detail. I've had the privilege, or you let me, talked to you several times in the last couple of years regarding our proposal on a small structure and large culvert funding program. And today we'll give you the details on the program, how it would work, and what we are actually requesting. So we're going to start out. This is Greg Bavra from the South Dakota LFAP in Brookings, and he's going to just quickly go through some slides that show some examples of our efficient structures and culverts.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioner. We were asked by the South Dakota Association of Towns and Townships to help them look at this ongoing problem with small structures and large culverts. I had experience in this back from Senate Bill 1 when I did a lot of work on Senate Bill 1 for infrastructure. And so it was easy for us to roll this in for the Township Association. But I'll show you some examples of what we're dealing with out here in the township systems. Got a lot of small structures, a lot of WPA bridges back in the 30s and 40s that were built. Today's roadways have got wider than the structures. They become functionally obsolete. We can't get farm equipment through them anymore. To be quite honest with you, I don't believe anyone is inspecting these structures at this time. They do not fall under the federal bridge program, so the counties are not responsible for them. And I don't think townships are going out and getting consultants to take a look at these. And there are many of them in this condition. Railings are gone. There's huge safety impacts with that. There's no postings on most of these structures. So many times in these small structures, if they would be inspected properly and posted, you wouldn't even drive a fire truck, ambulance, anything over these structures. Timber structures that are out there that are failing. You can see this is on a very low volume road, but they become very low volume roads when you have infrastructure like this and you can't cross them. The larger culverts, 96 inch diameter culverts, we see these on a regular basis. Very prevalent in the eastern side of the state that we have failure on these large pipes. Township road, we had a failed pipe, began piping underneath, roadway fails, and now we're into trying to replace those in the water, which is very difficult. And there's a picture of some 48-inch pipes that were removed on the township system. More pictures of failed culverts. Just some examples of what we see on an everyday basis. Wooden timber bridges that we know are in failing condition out there. If you drive in the country and you drive on township roads, you're going to cross these. It's just the way it's going to be. Someone done some nice channel work here. Bridge is going to fail anyway. Here is an example of a completed project I put in. This was had an 18-foot structure on it, very narrow, had railings, couldn't get farm equipment down it. This was local to my area. And if you get out in that area, you need to go nearly to 281 to come around, about an eight mile pass to get around that. Took out the structure, put a couple of twin 48s in, and resolved the problem. So with that, I will let Dick go through the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Does anyone have any questions or comments on this part? I'd like to take just a minute to introduce the people that are accompanying me here. Besides Greg, Tom Twite is a member of the County Commissioners Association and resides in Hughes County. Chris Jacobson in the back row over here is the Assistant Executive Director of the South Dakota Association of County Commissioners. She's here representing Bob Wilcox, who has a bill up in committee, I understand. Sitting next to her is Maureen Wiggins. She's our executive director for the Township Association. And then we have Dirk Rogers, who's the highway superintendent from Brown County. And there's three members of the board of the Southfield Association of Towns and Townships. David Scott from down in the Charles Mix County area. Jim Puffer from Beetle County, Huron. And Darwin Bettman from Brown County. We have one more highway superintendent here. There he is.
Mike.
Mike Cowan is from Hyde County, over by Highmore County. The highway superintendent. Well, again, I want to thank this commission for the cooperation and that you displayed on this program and allowing me to present it. This will be the third or fourth time I've presented parts of it. And also, I want to thank Mr. Berquist and his staff. They've been very cooperative and helpful throughout this entire process. We call this a small structure, large culvert funding proposal. It's submitted by four organizations. There are the Association of County Commissioners, Towns and Townships, the LTAP, or Local Transportation Assistance Program, and the County Highway Superintendents Association. As a background of the proposal, it's a request for state highway funds to assist in funding the repair of these small structures. We're defining as any structure that's less than 20 feet, spans less than 20 feet. As you recall, a bridge by definition in South Dakota law is a structure that spans at least 20 feet. So these are smaller bridges, but they're not called bridges. And the large culvert, we have labeled them as culverts that are 16 square feet or larger. So we're looking at bridges shorter than 20 feet and culverts. A 16 square foot inch culvert is like 54 inches in diameter. So that's what we're looking at. The request is for the funding is to replace or repair structures less than 20 feet and culverts 16 square feet or larger to make critical safety and access improvements to townships and county secondary roads. Township roads they're mainly section line roads, but they can be put on their system by resolution. There's a number of ways that a road can get added to a township system. County secondary roads are those township roads in unorganized townships. So if the township disbands, the county then becomes responsible for the roads in that area. Initially, this was submitted to DOT in April of 2015. I attended your meeting in March of 2015, right after Senate Bill 1 was passed, and Secretary Burke was briefing on what was in the bill. He also talked about there was some discussion about providing more money for local governments, and that he gave you some options and clearly made it very plain that would be your policy decision whether or not to fund additional program using state highway funds. Move on here. When I met with you last, you brought up three concerns that I recall, and one of those was that you thought the counties should be involved, and as we go through this procedure, you'll see where the counties are deeply involved. You had concern about the extra work that would be put on the local government staff here in DOT, so we responded to that in our procedure. and your concern that with administration of the funds, so they were being utilized for their specific purpose. So in January, you directed Secretary Berquist to work with the counties, townships, and LTAP to come up with a proposal that could be implemented and meet those three factors that I just mentioned. So under the proposed procedure, the counties would implement the program in the same manner as the ongoing SWAP program. The SWAP program is wherein the Department of Transportation provides funds to first-class cities and counties in lieu of federal funds. For years, the counties and first-class cities have had an allocation of federal funds. After the passage of Senate Bill 1, the department was able to buy all of their, some of them had banked it and for years because to be able to have enough money to build a project. So DOT gave the counties and first-class cities the amount of money that they had in their bank.
Has left the conference.
And also they provide each year in the counties and first-class cities get an allocation of federal funds. They are being replaced by state funds. So the funds go out to the counties, and they utilize them for their priority projects. And the proposal here is that the money would be allocated to the counties, and they would run the program and report on what they were being able to accomplish. The procedure, going a little further, the Transportation Commission would annually determine the amount of funds available for the program and distribute the funds to the counties based on an inventory of needs in each county. Some more of the process, implementation of this program would require close cooperation and coordination between counties and townships as the counties would be the one who would receive and administer the funds. South Dakota LTAP would help facilitate the project by assisting in identification of the needed projects, documenting project progress, and providing other technical assistance. The priorities, townships would be responsible for assisting the counties in preparing an inventory of these small structures and large culverts on township roads, and for establishing priorities for township projects. The final project selection would be made by the Board of County Commissioners. LTAP would assist the counties in developing a reporting mechanism to show that funds are being used for the specified purpose. This could include photos before, during, and after project completion, timelines, project costs, and other pertinent information. LTAP will provide an annual report to the Transportation Commission. So, looking at how that meets the three concerns you identified, the counties would be involved. They would actually be the recipients of the funds from the department and would select the projects to be constructed. We reduce staff time because I guess the main function that the DOT staff would be to distribute the money based on our distribution formula. And as far as project administration, LTAP would assist the counties in doing that and providing reports to you. after we put the proposal together, it was decided by the task force that we needed a inventory of the small structures, large culverts. So up there it's listed, I know you can't see it, but that's the same chart in your handout. That's in alphabetical order. It tells the number of structures in each county and how many townships had reported. And beside the county, the first column is where it ranks within the state in the number of structures. So looking at Aurora County is ranks number 37. They have a total of 67 qualifying structures and 20 townships that reported. So if you go down through that, that we ended up with a little 7,078 structures and 623 townships reported. There's also down on the lower right-hand column is a list of nine counties that opted not to participate in the program this year. This next chart shows the inventory results on a map, and the counties that are colored red have over 200 structures, qualifying structures within their county. And you can see they're pretty much concentrated on along the eastern, the river basins on the eastern side of the state, and since water runs downhill, a lot of it ends up down in the southeast corner of the state. The light blue.
Who did this inventory? Did the county themselves?
It was the county highway superintendents are the ones that were responsible for getting the inventory. They worked with the townships, and the townships provided numbers of structures within their county. The highway superintendent put it all together and became part of the inventory. Thank you for the question.
Just for clarification, there are townships in reporting counties that did not report to the county. Is that right?
No. All of the results came through the county.
Yeah, but there were townships reporting counties, or townships within those reporting counties that did not report.
Oh, yes.
Is that correct?
And in those cases, the county highway superintendent conducted the inventory.
I see. Okay, so the inventory within a reporting county is complete.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. The light blue ones are over 100. The dark blue have 50 to 100 structures, and the yellow is less than 50. And the white ones are the nine counties that didn't participate. As far as distribution of funds, we looked at different methods of doing that, and what we came up with I hope you can find these in your handout. This would be page 5 in your handout. But what we did, we took $2 million, which is the amount that we would like to request. We divided the $2 million by 7,078, which was the total number of structures inventoried, and it came out that each structure was equal to $280. So then we took the $280 per structure, applied that to the number of structures in each county, and came up with a distribution based on the number of structures that were inventoried. We felt that was the best way to do that this year because we didn't have a complete inventory, and we don't know the condition of the structures. So we felt that we would just base the distribution on the number of structures within each county.
Do you think this is kind of a one-time way to do this distribution? In the future, it might evolve into more specifics, like you'd be able to, the counties would come and say, here's the, 27 structures that I would like to propose to get funded for a replacement.
Yes, and the procedure as we developed it, we said that in the first year, the distribution of funds would be based on the total number of qualifying structures on township and county secretary roads within each. This is back on figure one in the report. Thereafter, the funds would be distributed based on county inventories of funding needs, considering the condition, uses, and travel impacts of the involved structures and culverts within each county.
So I guess my question is, when the commission actually allocates the funds, will they know which culverts they're allocating the funds to? Because right now it just seems like you're throwing it into a big pot of money and saying, you know, we hope you use it lightly.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, the county commissioners would set the priorities of the project, and we would expect that them working in conjunction with the township officials would identify their most important structures, those that have the most impact. So we wouldn't plan that the department or the commissioners would get involved in, would have to get involved in the project selection. And then at the end of each funding cycle, LTAP would put together a report and submit to you that showed the actual use of the funds, the timelines and how things progressed. So it would have the information so you feel comfortable, I think, that the funds were being used for the purpose for which they were intended. Okay. So first we just ran it based on the number of structures. Then we did a little bit of tweaking to that. We made the decision that we would adjust the funding so that no county received more than $90,000 a year and no county would receive less than $5,000. So the second table called recommended fund distribution is based on those two factors. Nobody would get more than $90,000 or less than $5,000. And as far as the costs and the needs, this chart shows the typical replacement of large culverts and small structures, and that's figure number 6 in your handout. We averaged those, and the average cost to remove a bridge or deficient culverts, the average cost to do that removal was about $7,500 per project. The average culvert cost was $97 per foot, and so we just took the total culvert cost and the replacement cost, and we came up with a little over $21,000 per structure replacement. Listed on that table that we didn't include in calculating the average are two large projects in Jewell County where they were replacing large structures. The cost for those, one was $95,000 and one was about $84,000. So if you get some big culverts that are real deep because of the topography, they get really expensive. So we figured that just the average cost was $21,000. Then the next chart, we calculated the needs and the costs. So the inventory showed that there were 7,078 qualifying structures and culverts. The highway superintendent and LTAP were interviewed. They estimated that 25 to 35% of the structures were in failing condition, and another 10 to 15% were functionally obsolete. So we just made the assumption that based on 35% needing replacement, that would be 2,477 structures times the average cost of $21,000, came up with a total need of approximately $50 million. Our request for $2 million per year will help get the replacement upgrading program started, will allow counties to replace the structures with the most significant impact, and will permit more accurate quantification of the structures needing improvement, which could then be used for future distribution. And here's a couple colored sheets here. We just put that in here to give you some idea of the amount of miles and that we're talking about, and what portion are county secondary and what portion are township.
Let's take Aurora County. The first column of numbers is the number of structures that were submitted. Then we show the county primary system because that was part of the table. But the three lines that are within the dark black lines there shows the miles of road in township and miles of county secondary within each county. The middle column shows the percent of the roads that are township. So Aurora and Beetle are both 100% township roads. There are no unorganized townships in those two counties. The orange on the picture shows those that are at least they're between 60 and 100% township. That is, most of the roads are township roads. The silver or gray is those counties which have the most miles of road are county secondary. So we went down through the through all the counties, and you'll note at the bottom of the second page shows that there are 31,232 miles of township roads, 11,250 county secondary roads, and 73% of those are township roads, a total of a little over 43,000 miles on these two systems. So we're talking about the structures and culverts on 43,000 miles of township and county secondary roads. Put together a little bit of information or thoughts on the benefits from this program. Number one is emergency response. People that live out in the rural areas or along these roads need to be able to have fire protection, ambulance service, law enforcement. If the structure is not sufficient to handle that emergency equipment, then there will be time lost in when it's important to provide that emergency service. Agriculture relies a lot on township and county secondary roads as their field to farm and farm to market operations. Confined animal operations need to have the ability to get their feed and in and out of the area and the farm, and also to transport their finished livestock to market. Ethanol plants, they need access to have access all the time to their ethanol plants, and there are a number of other rural economic development activities that rely on these types of roads. And these roads are absolutely necessary for agricultural development to take place and help our small towns survive. They provide a lot of access for recreation, hunting, fishing, boating, bird watching, whatever. So every place you go to your fishing hole, you're going to be traveling on local roads. So it's that's a big item, is providing that access. Rural housing development, are accessed by these local roads. They also serve as the access for school buses, rural mail delivery, services like that. So then I just say that the program would fill a funding gap by assisting counties and townships to replace or improve small structures and large culverts to meet unmet needs to improve public safety, quality of life, rural economic development in all areas of the state. It would complement the ongoing community access grant program for small towns, the industrial park road grant, and agribusiness grant programs currently administered by the commission, and Senate Bill and the bridge involvement grant established by the legislature in Senate Bill 1. So that you do have a grant program you administer for improving the streets in small towns, those under 5,000 population, for industrial park roads, and access roads to the large, some of the large animal confinement systems. So we feel that in the bridge improvement program, which was set up by the legislature in Senate Bill 1, is for bridges. It's a $15 million program for those structures greater than 20 feet. So this would fill in the gap between the small towns and the large structures.
Do you have an idea currently how much is budgeted by the counties and townships for this specific purpose today, apart from the money you're asking for?
Mr. Chairman, I can tell you what the total budget is for townships. It's the total budget for townships on an annual basis is about $34 million a year, and that comes from property tax and the vehicle registration fees. And at this time, those amounts are just about equal, about $17 million.
But that's for everything. That's winter maintenance. That's,
yeah,
just not for culverts. I'm wondering if it's $50 million, this $2 million would take 25 years to replace them all. There's got to be some local funds as well that's being used for the same purpose, right?
Yeah, that would be. That could be done.
Following on there, are you aware of any townships that have taken advantage of Senate Bill 1's authority to levy for these types of structures and culverts?
I have some information on that. That's only been available for 1 year because it can only be done at the annual meeting.
You know, there's no doubt there's a great need, but some leverage always helps too.
Yeah.
You know, and responsibility on that end.
So the bill became effective in July of 2015, so that they would pass the annual meeting date. So there's been 1 year that they could.
Yeah, I understand.
Could levy it, and there was about 70 townships have levied additional taxes this first year.
There are some townships that have taken advantage of that.
And I think there are 8 counties that have increased their property tax.
And talking specifically about the townships.
Yeah. But about 80 townships.
Anyone else have any questions for Mr. Howard? Otherwise,
one more on that county township. Cooperation and those kinds of things. Do you anticipate that if one way or another, some of those structures need to be taken care of, but will there be a process to identify ones that just simply have to go away and we have to suck it up and close some roads, things like that, in order to make it happen?
That will happen. But just looking at the township budget, $34 million a year. They have 31,000 miles of roads, so that's about $1,000 per mile. And according to actual figures, it costs about $1,000 per year to maintain a township road in fair condition. So there's not much left for taking care of these big bridges. When they cost $21,000 to do one, and they have a funds equivalent to $1,000 a mile, they definitely need help.
So, is the funding gap due to an unwillingness to raise taxes, or is there a cap on the taxes that can be levied?
There is a cap on the taxes to be levied that was kind of taken care of in Senate Bill 1, where they were authorized to go raise it a 50 cents per $1,000 evaluation and outside of the limit. So there is some ability now to increase the taxation without having it count against the limit. Before that bill was passed, there were a lot of townships that took advantage of the opt-out process, which allowed them to go through a process, and they could increase their tax revenues above that, which was the cap.
Mr. still hasn't answered my question. Why the funding gap?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's a lot of miles of road. Their only sources of revenue are the property tax and the vehicle registration fees. The vehicle registration fees, townships get about 16% or 17% of the vehicle registration fees. Counties get 75%, and cities get about 16%. So those are the sources of revenue. You know, property taxes.
Mr. Chairman, Markwood's got a question.
We're talking about the funding gap. Why is it that the counties can't raise more money to solve this problem themselves? And so Mr. Howard was responding to that.
You're done with it.
The property tax.
I do have a question.
Okay, we'll get to you in a second.
The property tax goes for school districts get about 60% of the property tax. Counties get about 25%. I think cities get 15% or so. Townships get 1.6% of the total property tax that are collected. There's a limit on the amount of property tax that the individual can pay, and it goes for all those other purposes as well.
Okay. All right, Ralph, you had a question?
Yeah. Dick Howard, have you ever done a study on any of the roads that are absolutely not, township roads that are absolutely not necessary to accommodate today's time? And the reason I say that is I see some county roads that you can't even drive on them because cornfields come in from both sides, but yet they're township roads. And after the corn is harvested out of them, then you might see a couple hunters go by there. And I guess, you know, I understand your position that somebody don't want to close this road or that road because he might be able to drive down there to kill a pheasant, but you're telling me that it costs $1,000 to maintain that road. And I'm sitting here questioning you, you know, how many of these structures you could get rid of as well as get rid of these roads. And I understand back in, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, they were pertinent for moving back and forth. But in today's time, has there ever been a study done by you or the townships, Mr. Howard, that relates to the roads that don't need to be part of your system?
Mr. Chairman, the man upstairs here, every year the township goes through and evaluates their roads. Townships have, and counties also, they have the ability to classify roads as minimum maintenance, which is defined as maintenance that's sufficient to allow traffic on the intermittent traffic that occurs. We've also got a law passed a couple years ago that allows them to classify some roads as no maintenance. The township is responsible for the maintenance and liability on all these section line roads. There's a process for vacating township roads, and that is done fairly frequently, but it's getting now so it's more difficult to vacate a road because you can't vacate a road that leads to any federal land, and a lot of the game fish and parks wildlife and areas. So it's difficult. You go through the process and hold a public hearing, and they take those comments into account when they make the decision whether to do the vacating. In the last, a couple of years, there have been the Department of Game Fish and Parks has came in and opposed the vacating of those roads because it serves their hunting and fishing clientele. So, I mean, they're doing the best they can, I think, in minimizing the maintenance costs on their roads to what's absolutely needed. If you make it no maintenance, then the township has no maintenance responsibility, and it reduces their liability.
All right, Mr. Howard, I know I'm going to let you have the last word here, but I know we've got to share the microphone. So, suggested by Mr. Secretary, why don't we start with the proponent? How many do we have here that are going to speak in favor of it? Okay. Why don't we get the proponents of what Mr. Howard's suggesting up first, and then I'm going to give the opponents an opportunity here. So when you get up to the microphone, please introduce yourself and what organization you're from.
Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dirk Rogers. I'm the Brown County Highway Superintendent. I was involved both in putting together the rules regarding how we were going to execute Senate Bill 1, as well as participating in the background that led us up to where we're at today with the small structure and big bridge, big culvert program. The 66 counties, we're all working off the same state laws, but the variation from county to county just blows my mind when I go to another county and see how they're doing it, because either the political climate or the terrain or the land use or whatever it is, you know, it's really hard to find consistencies from county to county. And this loophole or this structure that fell through the cracks in statute like this that takes something that predominantly appears on the township roads, but it's the responsibilities of the county. So when you start trying to prioritize that stuff, you can imagine you're going to take care of all your county primary stuff first, and then as things trickle down, you know, you hope that you can maintain your infrastructure on the smaller, on the township roads with those size pipes. The fact that a majority or a large number of these structures are WPA projects, I mean, that should tell you something about the age of them. It says a little something about the construction in the 30s that I wish we wouldn't mind recreating again, but, you know, there's a lot of things like that. It, the situation in Brown County, they're far more functionally obsolete than they are a structural issue. As you see from that table, there's 2,900 miles, or the table that was up there earlier, there's 2,900 miles of total road in Brown County. And then the land use, of course, makes it a little harder, as was brought up, to vacate things. Brown County has also reduced the number of bridges. Those culverts that are in your other table, all but one of those sets of culverts replaced at what was a federally inspected bridge. So we are making efforts to try to lessen, you know, the size of our infrastructure and things like that. My experience with this particular topic is a township will come to you and say, hey, we'd like you to prioritize this pipe. And in reference to your question earlier, I don't, you know, it's not so much a funding shortfall as this would give you an opportunity to maybe put a little higher prioritization on those subjects or on those specific pipe, more so than just saying, yep, we haven't got $50,000, so we're not going to do it, you know. So my perspective on that's a little different. Now, you might go to the county next to me, and I know for a fact one of the counties that adjoins me looked at this completely different. The statute says may, okay? May sometimes is, yep, we're going to do it. And sometimes it's where we may not do it. And that goes back to what I say about the individual counties and how they're going to interpret that. So even how this is going to function relative to each specific county, I think you're going to see quite a variance. And I'm also here for the highway superintendents. I'm from a larger county. The amount that this could potentially give me is 0.3% of my budget. But it would be utilized, and we would do a couple more of them a year. And also, the other question is, in Brown County, I would say we're going to spend between $75,000 and $100,000 on this type of structure. But I have it lumped in with all my small bridges as well. There's not a lot of specificity there because we're just going to take care of all of them.
It was mentioned earlier that they didn't think there was any inspection processes in place for these kinds of structures. Is that true in Brown County?
Chairman, relative to the other programs, like the Organized Federal Bridge Program, where you've got a list and an inventory and a criteria, and you got to have a PE go check it out, and he's got the boilerplate answers he's going to give you about your bridge, versus the township folks who go out and are supposed to drive every year and look at the small ones. There's not a statute specifically telling you other than that these are the responsibility of the counties.
So,
okay. So in comparison compared to the bridge inspection?
No, it's not like that. You go by, you peek in there, you see if there's a crack. And I got to be honest, rural fire departments are usually the first ones when I have something that's really getting sketchy. The first guy that calls you is the rural fire department. Said, hey, we had a structure fire out here. We tried to cut through the old Johnson Slough and that one old deal where the Hutterites knocked the sidewalls off the bridge. Well, it wasn't looking too good. So then we'll go in and tear that out and put new pipe in. So it's a lot of that. It's user driven from that standpoint. And that's what I'd like to say about that. I'd happily answer any questions at any time about the county.
Why should this be the state's concern, from your perspective?
Chairman, a little bit as to why we're a little more aggressive about it in Brown County. For instance, the terrain and your drainage. Bad pipe. And everybody has drainage issues all over the place. But bad pipe in Brown County go a long ways upstream because it's so flat. So I usually try to catch it, and I would say the same thing to the state, before eventually it's going to become someone else's problem. You know, another bit of motivation for me to replace a pipe on a township road, because if they're going to haul 185 bushel corn, I want them on something that's easier to fix. If we little culvert goes out, now they're going to go around the section and pound the heck out of another road. And I would, you know, the same thing can happen. If we close county bridges for repair and pushes traffic out on 281 or State 20 or something up there, that too has an impact on the state.
Thank you.
You bet.
All righty. If any other questions? All right. Thank you very much
for your time.
Who's next?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Twite. I'm a Hughes County Commissioner, and I'm on the board of directors for the South Dakota Association of Counties. And I've known a little bit about this and been involved peripherally with the formation of this idea for quite some time, and our association took the position officially that we support it. And why should counties be involved in township roads is a question that's come up. My district that I represent is called the Oahe District. I represent the counties of Hughes, Stanley, Sully, Hyde, and Hand. And we have a variety of government association. In Hughes County, we only have one township that's organized. Sully County, Stanley County have none. Hyde and Hughes have more than, or Hyde and Hand have more than we do. In Hughes County, our township roads are county secondary roads. And it's been interesting to me as I became a commissioner to see the accounting requirements of a county are tremendous. When the budget's presented to us, we have more funds than I can actually keep track of, but we keep track of funds that are used specifically for each type of road in our county. The funds that are used come from specific sources, as was mentioned earlier, from licensing, from a variety of taxes, et cetera. And those are accounted for. We're audited at least every 2 years to make sure that the funds we receive go to the funds that they're supposed to be and that they're used for their intended purpose. And I think that's why the counties were asked to become involved in this, because if you designate any money to go to a specific purpose, as you're asking here in this case, counties know how and are trusted with accounting for those monies, and we do a good job of it. So I think that's our involvement. Our involvement is the fact that we have this mixture of how do we take care of these secondary roads, whether they're county secondary or township. Funding was questioned here once that I heard while I sat here. Municipalities, road districts, and townships have the ability beyond taxes to assess street maintenance fees. Municipalities do it quite often. Those fees are, like any other tax, presented to the county auditor. The county auditor puts it on a tax bill for that specific road. Road districts can do that. Townships can do it, counties can do it in, for secondary roads only in front of platted lots. So if a township has a section somewhere in the middle of it where there's platted lots, they can assess that street maintenance fee in front of those platted lots, but the road that gets to it, they cannot. So how do you get to it? How do you maintain that? How do you make sure that there's a culvert there when you get there? This is a way to do that, and again, a very much needed way to do that. Question came up, what are we doing about roads that we really don't need? My answer to that is, number one, there's really not a road in South Dakota that we don't need sometime. But I know in Hughes County and in many counties, we're diligently looking at those roads that can be maintained less because they have alternate routes that can be used. But bear in mind that when you have harvest going on, that every single mile, square mile in South Dakota, somebody has to access a road to get them out to a feeder road, to get them to an elevator. Your job as a state is to provide those main roads. Our job as counties and townships is to provide that feeder road that comes to that main road. So the state's involvement, you know, the whole economy of the state rides on how you get product, whether it's ag product or a manufactured product, from the place it starts to those main feeder roads out to somebody's mine. And this type of funding is what we need to have to make sure that these small structures don't impede the entire road. With that, I would take any questions.
Doesn't look like there's any questions. You did too good a job explaining the first time. Okay, other proponents? People in favor? Okay.
Chairman, members of the commission, Greg Mahabra, South Dakota LTAP in Brookings. We've looked at the shortfall in funding for years, and I think when we talk about this shortfall in funding or the gap in funding, many years we went under a tax freeze. And under that tax freeze, we deferred a lot of maintenance. And when we defer maintenance, we always say for every dollar we defer, it costs us $5 on the back end. So as we continue to defer maintenance, our costs increase by five times. So in how many years down the road is it where we're going to be, instead of $50 million in the hole, we're going to be $200 million in the hole? Because it's not a one-time fix. We go out and fix all the culverts today that are failing, there's going to be new ones tomorrow. It's going to be a repetitive process of failure. And that's part of the reason I support this. Part of the other reason, the highway superintendent for almost 20 years in a small county, I had both organized and unorganized townships. And your level of service to your county secondary was always better than the townships could afford. And my fear in today is these small towns or small counties with townships in them, when them townships get to the point where they can't afford maintenance anymore, what's going to happen to those townships? They're going to dissolve. When they dissolve, they become county secondary. Our counties continue to shrink. When I started in my county, there was 13 employees. Today we have six. Plus we picked up in secondary roads another almost 80 miles that we didn't have originally. And I look at the long term. If we continue to lose townships to the county system, the burden on the counties is going to become the same as it is on the townships. And that's part of the reason I feel that this is a good program for both. Any questions?
Any questions? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, anybody else here as a proponent for this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, I'm Dave Scott from Geddes. there's such a thing as an alumni of the DOT Commission, I would be one of them.
That's right.
20 years ago, I served on this illustrious commission here with Mr. Fulberg.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to speak to you this morning as a clerk of Jackson Township. I've been a clerk for 32 years. There was a question about abandoning roads. About 4 years ago, our township went through that procedure. The reason that you don't close roads is the game, fish, and parks. We're right along the river. One road in particular would take you to the ground down there. It wouldn't take you to the water, but we get a letter out of pier in opposition to that particular road. It serves no farmer or anything. It's just basically a trail. But that's the kind of thing that we face. You talk about the hunters. The other thing is the hunting community itself. Those roads in the fall are very busy. We abandoned, I think, probably 4 miles. But those roads actually weren't roads anymore. They were right away that went into somebody's pasture and that sort of thing. But we have, like Dick said, we have minimum maintenance roads and full maintenance roads and that sort of thing. If you abandon your minimum maintenance roads, you actually cut your hand off, because we do get some funding for those minimum maintenance roads. It's actually the same as a full maintenance. So you don't want to be cutting your miles unnecessarily. It's a procedure that is publicly advertised, and anybody in opposition can come and we have a public hearing. But I think that we need to remember that these roads are for the public use. Yes, farmers need to get there, but the hunters, the fishermen, the boaters and all that all use these roads. And we have had, in our county, we had a township that dissolved. And as Greg said, now it's a responsibility of the county. That's not something I like to see. I think the best government is township government. You can manage your own funding that way. We've been in opt-out for probably 25 years. This last year, we decided to go with the 50-cent thing. It was quick and easy. You can change it year to year if you don't need it. The other thing I want to remind you is you don't, it's not like going and trading your pickup off for a new one.
Has joined the conference.
You don't know when the culvert's going to fail. You might have a disastrous rain. A few years ago, we had 3 culverts washed out. They were, laying out in the pasture. Or some, they rust through and somebody's calling in at 6 o'clock in the morning, there's a hole in the road. That's when we do it. We don't go around and periodically change things out just because they're 30 years old. So you're talking about planning. It's kind of hard to plan for a disaster when you don't know when they're going to happen. But we do as needed, I guess, would be the basic thing I would say for the culverts. I think this could be an important aid as far as the entire state, because they say township people aren't the only ones who use it. And they connect to county roads, which connect to state roads. And I would urge your support of this measure.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Other proponents? All right. If we don't have any other proponents, how about the opponents? Anyone against?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commission members. I'm Representative Mary Duvall from here and here. I would like to take just a second. I'm chair of the House Transportation Committee, and there are several committee members who are here today just to see your role in what we do in taking care of the state transportation system. So kudos to those committee members who showed up. I was also House Prime of Senate Bill 1. 2 years ago, and I'm asking you to resist this proposal at this time. You know, as we went through working on Senate Bill 1, first of all, we were very specific about the bridges and the structures that we intended to cover. It's encompassed in the language. We were told that we would need about $140 million a year to meet our goal for taking care of the state's highway system. And in bold legislative fashion, we passed Senate Bill 1, which raises about half of what we would need. Senate Bill 1 generated about $70 million this last year. So it's not like there's a lot of extra money just floating around waiting to be spent. We were not insensitive to township needs as we worked on Senate Bill 1. A lot of amendments were offered. Some were accepted. Some were not. But the final agreement gave an extra $2.9 million a year per township. And as we've already heard, we gave townships the authority to levy additional taxes as they needed to take care of their local needs. Last year, we passed House Bill 1137, which generated another $1.02 million for townships. I looked at a report from the Department of Legislative Audit comparing township revenues and township expenditures. And over the last 5 years, income has exceeded outgo by almost $14 million. So townships have been getting more money. They have been given tools they could use. We heard about CAFOs. We heard about ethanol plants. There are programs that this commission already utilizes to help pay for some of those special road agreements. Some can also do road haul agreements where the CAFO owner will take care of some of those expenses. So, you know, townships, just like you, just like the rest of the state, are in a difficult position of having to allocate limited resources. And that indeed may mean that you cannot maintain a road system that came to us in the 20s and 30s. But I would really encourage the commission to focus on our state roads and bridges and the ones that we specifically referenced in Senate Bill 1 and reject this proposal at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I ask permission to hand out.
Sure. Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Deb Mortensen. I'm the registered lobbyist for the Associated General Contractors. Representative Duval mentioned Senate Bill 1. AGC was one of 27 groups who banded together to form the Roads Are Vital Coalition that worked with the administration and legislators to help pass Senate Bill 1. As you can imagine, putting together this coalition and keeping them moving down the same road was hurting cats. But at the end of the day, we came up with a deal, and we're all stuck with that. So we've had one full year of implementation. There was an emergency clause on Senate Bill 1. It became effective April 1st, so we've had one full year. It's still not certain if revenues are going to continue at the rate they are now. So we would encourage you to hold off on taking money out of the highway fund until we've had a couple of good years to look at that revenue and see if it's going to be a steady and viable source. A deal is a deal. We're all still in the Roads Are Vital Coalition. We ask you to resist the urge to take money out of the highway fund. Thank you.
Any other proposals?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brenda Foreman. I'm Executive Director for South Dakota Association of Cooperatives and also a member of the Roads Are Vital Coalition. As was mentioned, there was a lot of talk that went on in keeping that coalition together as we developed Senate Bill 1. Of counties, townships, a lot of ag organizations were involved in that and very clearly looked at the plan and the program which was being proposed within Senate Bill 1. The proposal you have before you attempts to change the programs and plans which we had supported as a coalition when we came under and with the support of Senate Bill 1. We are looking at moving money from where we don't know. They have asked for money, not specifically as to where that money would come from. We would hope it would not come from any of the access programs that have been refunded through some of the money and allowing that option for others within the road structure. Additionally, as was stated, there has been additional money that's gone to the townships,
but also within Senate Bill 1, they were given the ability to increase their taxes, which it is nice to hear that some of the townships are doing that, but we would really truly encourage you to allow those entities to continue that increase, see what funding is available to that area before we begin to divert funds from Senate Bill 1 funding, the plans and proposals with which that they came forth with. So with that, we would ask you to oppose and set aside this program at this moment until Senate Bill 1, the plans, programs that we supported have time to come to fruition and see where the dollars are actually generated from, how much, how short we are, and what we can accomplish within that. Thank you. I will stand by for questions.
Any questions? All right, more opponents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. My name is Yvonne Taylor, and I'm with the South Dakota Municipal League, and we do oppose the creation of this new program. There are unlimited needs for funding at the local level, and if we start taking funds from things like the Community Access Program or the Agribusiness Park Program or Industrial Park Access Roads, we don't know where those needs go then for what they need. We feel that those programs are already short of funding, and there are ample needs out there that could use those, and especially when you give into consideration the populations and the industries that are served by those programs. We would also point to the local effort issue. At a time when the average levy of our cities and towns was $7.85, our counties were at $4.20. The average township levy was somewhere between 46 and 73 cents. Townships also receive that ability that we've heard multiple times to put on the 50 cents that are outside of the cap in Senate Bill 1. And 80 townships that have done it isn't very many. I think there's 900 and some of them out there. So they really have not taken much access of that. Certainly all local entities could use more infrastructure funding, but in general, the more purely local needs are addressed locally. What is the compelling state interest in using state funds for these very, very local roads? I would add also that in light of Senate Bill 1, the legislature made decisions on these very topics and decided that that was not an appropriate use of state funds. I would say also that this morning over in the Capitol, Senate Bill 119 was introduced, which would improve culverts in the state. It's a vehicle right now, but if the legislature intended for state funds to be used in this manner, they'll have the opportunity to act on that this legislative session. Finally, we think that this attempt at a new program follows the $1.5 million the townships were able to take from the license plate funding formula last year at the expense of my municipalities. We would ask again, where does this end? Those local needs are endless. It's very poor public policy to rob Peter to pay Paul, and we would urge you not to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other opponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, David Owen with the South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and I can tell you this, there is not an organization within government or outside government that has enough money to do everything that they would like to do. I see this bill as pulling a thread on your suit, and if you do that on both sleeves, you can end up wearing a vest quicker than you know. Allocating limited resources to unlimited demands takes a process and people to make the decisions, and you are part of that process. I have no idea what you all did that made the governor mad enough to give you this job. But the system has said, and the system we back, and the tax entities we back, that this is the process that we should use, and it should not be disrupted with this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. We have other opponents. All right, if not, Mr. Howard, I said, let's have the last word here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a couple of comments, I guess. We've always looked at our transportation system to consist of state highways, local roads. It takes all of them to take care of our economic growth, quality of life, which are very important to us. An example, the state is they're getting large grain handling facilities constructed along the railroad. They're putting big investments in improving the railroads. This helps keep trucks off the state highways, but still the grain to those terminals has to be delivered, and it's delivered on local roads. And the trucks that are hauling that product to the elevator are getting larger and heavier, and township and county secondary roads are not designed for the size and weight of trucks and transportation that's used on that. The state has been pushing and recruiting to get the major agricultural development to locate in the state. And as they do that, again, the local roads are being punished. You look at the animal confinement facilities, most of them are located out in the country because the zoning requirements, they want to keep the operations away from the public. So they end up out on local roads, which again, is the heavy, strenuous roads. I served as Secretary of Transportation for 11 years, and I think traditionally the department and this commission has looked at the transportation system in total, the local and the state highways. And there were programs when the locals came in with a problem, and there was a solution that the state could assist in doing. We set up programs to help the locals with those issues using state highway funds. And one example I can use is the community access grant program that was started back when I was secretary. It's still an ongoing program, but it's just testified here. It's been very beneficial to the small towns and them being able to have manufacturing facilities. In closing, when Senate Bill 1 was going through the process, the townships are part of the alliance or the group that were working together. I worked with the Senate the Transportation Committee Chairman, Senator Valley, had a lot of discussions with the governor's office regarding the small amount that townships, in particular, but other local governments were getting out of Senate Bill 1. And I was convinced by Senator Valley that when you're trying to secure funds, it's not the time to fight over the distribution. You don't need to bring another issue into the debate on increasing the funding, and that we could look at the distribution after the funds were available. And so being a team player, I didn't want to do anything to jeopardize the passage of Senate Bill 1. But I'm looking at that second part of it, so we can tweak the redistribution after the funds are available. So while we very much appreciated Senate Bill 1 and what it brought in, as I recall, the total was $86 million. $68 million of that went to the state highway fund, and $17 million was designated for local funds. But when the big grant program was set up for $15 million, $7 million of that came right out of the local government road and bridge fund, money that would have been distributed to cities, counties, and townships, and went into the big program, which it's only for the cities and counties. So all I'm asking here is that you consider helping us get this program started. I think if it can be started and successful, we will be able to get support for increasing the fees.
Can you, Mr. Howard, address the, there's two kind of recurring themes in the opponents that I'd like to kind of hear your take on. You know, one is, you know, that this has been an issue, you know, we've mentioned that some of these have been in since the 1930s. What's the harm in waiting just a couple more years to see how Senate Bill 1 kind of plays out and, you know, if that's going to help solve the problem? And then the second part being, you know, it seems like Senate Bill 1 also gave the townships and counties some ability to raise taxes. Have they really done their job in trying to support this on a local basis before coming to us? Can you address those two?
Well, the last one first. Of course, they can do more. I've always felt that property tax, however, was a poor way of funding public transportation. Because it's not just the landowners that are paying the property tax, they're getting benefits from the use of the roads. They don't, both governments don't get any part of the gas tax and other true highway use revenues. So I think that while they can do more to raise their property tax, there's a limit to how much they can raise their taxes. As far as waiting another year or two, you know, as we all know, the size of the farm equipment is getting larger, the weights are getting heavier, and a lot of the structures are getting to the point where they have to be closed. And there are roads that provide emergency access to the residents. They provide school bus access in a lot of our rural areas. So there is a need, and I would ask for your support of this proposal.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any other questions for Mr. Howard?
One, so as you said, the farm equipment continues to get larger and maybe taxes these roads. Do the local landowners have the ability to self-fund the replacement of any of these structures?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they could provide the funding. It would have to be constructed to certain standards.
Sure.
But I think townships could accept funds from operators just like we can accept funds from you. Yes.
Any other questions for Mr. Howard before we let him go? All right, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you for your patience and listening and all of your support along the way. I know you have to make a policy decision.
Mr. Secretary or Counselor, I'm not sure which is the right one to ask this question to you, but it seems like there's a little confusion on Senate Bill 1. Can Senate Bill 1 fund these types of structures, the less than 20-foot bridges and things, or is there any restrictions in there on the use?
I'll try to answer that question, Mr. Chairman. If I understand the question, are you talking about the big fund that was created under Senate Bill 1? No, the big fund would not. These types of structures are not eligible under the big fund.
Okay. And could you also maybe clarify, if we were to vote for this $2 million, where does that money come from?
If you chose to implement and fund this program, then the second question for you would be that exact one, and you would have a number of options, some of which were even mentioned by some of the speakers. Certainly one option is what I will call new money, which would come from the state highway. Or you could repurpose some of the existing money that you've already provided. Two examples of that would be, I think it was Yvonne that talked about, you could put $2 million more into the economic grant programs. You can move that into this program. Another option would be some of the money that you're already provided to colleagues under the SWAT program could be repurposed for this program. So there's three potential options there, either new money or existing.
Mr. Secretary, as you've worked on this on our behalf, have you developed an opinion for the department as to whether this is an appropriate priority for the funds that you administer?
We, Mr. Chairman, the the department had kind of committed early on that based on the commission's direction last spring that we would work with the entities you directed the student to come up with a program that would work logistically from our standpoint. We made a commitment, which I think is accurate in this case, not to take a position one way or the other, that it was, this is really a policy call. It's a reference for the commission to determine whether this was an appropriate use of state highway funds if the needs met. If the needs were such that it should be funded out of the state.
What's your view on the suggestion that roads can't be closed because of game fish and parks, and also if these roads fail, that it will tax the state highway system because it will be utilized in a new way?
Mr. Chairman, while I'm stalling.
you don't have to answer.
No, and I appreciate the question. On the first question, I'm not an expert on the technicalities of the law, but I can tell you that most of the time when the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks opposes a township, proposed closure of a township road, we get a copy of that letter. And I can tell you they're not uncommon. And I think part of there's some state law that talks about maintaining access to public grounds, and I'm certainly not an expert. So I don't think that's certainly not a hollow claim. Game Fish Parks is very active in maintaining access to the state hunting and fishing ground, and those letters do go out quite frequently to townships saying that they object to a closure. I'm not sure to what extent closure of township roads would necessarily have a significant impact on the state highway system. A lot of that traffic probably ends up there anyway. Certainly there would be some, I imagine, that previously used a township road to get from point A to point B, that if that road is closed, they might jump on a state highway as a new tour route. I think the volume of that traffic compared with the overall volume of traffic the state highway roads are carrying today would be pretty insignificant.
Thank you.
Does any of the commissioners have any other questions for the made presentation? What's the commissioner's thoughts?
Well, first of all, I appreciate everybody that came here for and against. It's a very persuasive argument from both sides. It does help us understand the issues better, so I appreciate everybody being here. I'm not going to vote for this. The reason why, I owe everybody a forthright answer on that. Reasons why are there's three things I want to point out. We supported Senate Bill 1. Townships were addressed in that. To what degree is debatable, but they were supported. The townships, I don't think, have fully enacted their taxing authority. Again, townships are in a tough spot. I recognize that, but I think there's some things that can be done there. But probably what influences my decision the most is what I call scope creep, and that is this department, Transportation Department, we do a lot of different things that sometimes aren't always directly related to transportation. It's always a tie-in somewhere. We do a lot of grants. There's some things that revolve around economic development. And good things come from that. But at some point, you look at the scope of an organization, it starts creeping out where it gets a little too far. With Senate Bill 1 in place, townships being part of that, I think that falls under that category. Scope creep getting out there a little too far for me to support this thing going forward. So that's my position. I owe everybody, I think, that forthright answer. And, I want to say thank to everybody that testified either for or against this.
Yes, I would comment also. I think the report is well done. It's important work. But I don't think that it's the business of the state highway funds. So I'll be voting no.
And just to clarify, if we don't move forward, we probably don't even need to take a vote on this. But anybody else want to make any
decisions? Sure, if I can maybe just respond to that. and what you said is accurate, that you don't necessarily need to take action one way or the other. I would encourage
Mr. Chairman,
to take action one way or the other. This has been an issue that's been out there.
Mr. Mark, we're here.
Alan deserves that. That would just be my recommendation.
Commissioner Marquardt, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I feel there's other avenues that they can address this funding with other than the state highway funding at this point. So I personally would vote no if I had that opportunity at this point.
All right, does somebody want to make a motion to get something out on the table? And
just a question. I'll point this towards Carla. How should that motion read? I mean, we have a proposal in front of us. The proposal is for what? What's specific? How do you phrase that?
I think you could make a motion to reject the proposal to provide the additional funding.
Right. I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion before we vote? Kim?
Thank you. Go ahead, Kim. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did Mr. Roby's comments as well, and do appreciate everybody coming. I think, Dick, you've done a great job this, covering the things that we've asked for over the course of the time that we've been talking about this. And especially after hearing a lot of the testimony today, I think we've got a bigger problem than what we're trying to put a little tiny Band-Aid on a big wound. And I'm not sure that's a wise use of our dollars, for the state or, even the people on that are living by these roads or whatever. I think we need to relook at this thing again or whatever. But at this point, I'm just not ready to move forth with this because it's a bigger problem what we're addressing here and what $2 million can really do. And we might be in a worse off in a few years to come.
Now, I'm just going to say that, I'm certainly empathetic to townships. I've spent a lifetime traveling those roads, and I see the problems day after day, and a lot of it's not safe. But I, too, I'm going to vote for the motion to deny.
I was going to really echo what Kim said. It sounds, and I'm probably naive to how all that funding took place, and my eyes were kind of open today listening to a lot of that. But that's a systemic kind of issue, I think. I think there's a systems issue that probably needs to be addressed by a body other than this. And then the second part of what I wanted to say was I do believe that when the legislature passed that bill with a lot of input, I believe they expended an awful lot of capital in putting trust in the entities that were trusted with administering those funds. And I believe we need to let the process play out.
All good comments. Any other comments before we take a vote? Would you read the motion, sir?
Mr. Chairman, Mark, would repeat the vote, would you please? I mean, repeat the motion.
What I have for the motion is that it's a motion to reject state highway funding for township small structures and culverts.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to do a roll call vote, and all in favor of rejecting, as the councilor just mentioned, the funding for this, respond by saying aye.
Robert?
Hi. Blackheart?
Aye.
Robbie?
Aye. Rosenblum?
Aye.
Gannon?
Aye.
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 Motion
carries.
Well, thank you.
Thank you
for all your time and
good luck.
And
work.
Yeah.
We all learned a lot.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Fuller.
Mr. Chairman,
Greg Fuller is out sick today, so I will stand in briefly for him today. Division of Operations has two items on the agenda today, the first being the informational item for the construction change orders. Ryan Johnson is on hand today to address any questions you may have in that regard.
There was a mention in the attachment number 5 of Exhibit A, B, and C. Did we get those?
On the relinquishment request?
Yeah.
I will have those. I don't have a copy of that handy.
Oh. Well, sorry.
Okay.
Well, maybe we did get
that. It was the second email.
Oh, that was a real big attack.
Mm-hmm. Do we need to run some copies of that?
No, yeah, I've got it actually on my
okay.
iPad. I just didn't print that.
Okay.
Just today. Would have run me out of paper.
Okay. The second. Gracious enough to donate this copy.
Oh.
Red does look like it's big enough. Second item on the agenda is the Minnehaha County Access Control Relinquishment Request, and Brooke White is on hand to present this topic to you today.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. I am Brooke White. I'm the Access Management Engineer for Eastern South Dakota, and I am based out of the Sioux Falls office. I will reference you to get started today with a little bit of history. So if you could turn to Exhibit A, the last page of A, and Exhibit B. Exhibit B is an aerial photo of the second to last page of Exhibit A.
Look, can you give us page numbers on that? That's a big document.
I actually cannot. I have them.
A is pretty quick
in
my presentation.
Oh, sure.
I might be able to put it up on the screen. Give me just 1 minute.
Yeah, I found it the other day. Okay.
Got it?
The pages aren't numbered, so I just have each exhibit printed out. My apologies. So from Exhibit A, you can see the plat for the Owens addition that shows tracks 1, 2, and 3. And then Exhibit D is actually an aerial photo of the area in question. Point A that's labeled on Exhibit D references tract 1. And then point B on Exhibit D is in reference to track 2. So to give just a bit of background to this request, Mr. Lance Warren came to us with interest in purchasing track 3. He was asking and requesting for additional access because there is no access at the state to track 3. In researching his request, we determined that there was control of access across all of track 1, 2, and 3. And so in doing that research, the department determined that they would not allow additional access to track 3 based on the discovery of the control of access along that track. So what was suggested by myself and others is that Mr. Warren create an easement from track 2 to track 3. In researching that effort, it was additionally discovered that Mr. Warren doesn't have a permit for the approach on track 2. And because there is no permit, then there also is no break in the control of access for the access that exists there today. So in order to rectify the situation, it was suggested that Mr. Warren submit an application for a permit as well as an application for the relinquishment of the control of access so that he could in turn retain that property right that he currently does not have. So you should have received the memo kind of describing the application at hand, and I'll go through each of the documents that were attached with that memo. So Exhibit A is the application that Mr. Warren submitted to our office. I will note that it was my mistake that I neglected to fill in the information at the bottom of the first sheet of Exhibit A. Specifically, the application was received by my office on November 9th of 2015. I created the brief that you have before you today. We received FHWA authorization for this request on approximately December 6th of 2016. legal counsel has reviewed this application, and the landowner has submitted a right-of-way appraisal that has been reviewed and approved by the right-of-way office for the DOT. So in addition, contained in Exhibit A is background information submitted by the applicant in reference to his request. Exhibit B is the applicant's initial sketch of a site plan for his plans actually for track two. Currently on track three. Track two is where he has his existing business. He has an auto body repair shop that he has there on track two, but on track three he's actually proposing to have storage facilities built on that site. Exhibit C actually is the highway deeds that initially created the control of access along tracks 1, 2, and 3, and those were included as verification of that research. I pointed out that Exhibit D is an aerial photo of the area in question. Again, point A is to track 1, which is not what we are discussing here today, but point B is to track 2, the location of the request being made. Exhibit E is actually two different documents, the first being a contract for deed that Mr. Warren has with James Oberg for track two. And then the second document is the quitclaim deed that James Oberg has that actually shows his right to ownership of track two. The next item is the approval from the Environmental Office for the DOT saying that this relinquishment request is approved by Environmental Review. And the last document that was in the packet is the appraisal that was submitted by the landowner showing the value of the track 2 with access versus without. And the difference of those two values is $14,300. That will be monies that the landowner will have to pay to acquire the property right should the commission choose to approve his request. So with that, the department has reviewed and is moving for approval with your approval.
Any questions? What is the distance between that approach from the interstate and the driveway there?
That is a good question.
Is there a restriction on that as well?
We do have restrictions set up within our administrative rules. However, this is not a state route that this access exists on. It's on a crossroad that intersects with the interstate system. So I can't speak to the legality in terms of our administrative rules and how it would apply to, in this case, a county road. But if you look at the second page of the memo, it does give information about the spacing to approaches adjacent to the access that's being requested for relinquishment. There's 132 feet to the access to track 1, and then there's a field approach that's east of there that's approximately 712 feet. I did provide some information that if we were to classify this, if it was a state highway, it would likely be classified under the rural classification, which does constitute 1,000-foot spacing between access points. But there is a caveat to that in the administrative rules that the area engineer of that location may choose to reduce that down to 660 feet.
And staff's recommendation is 60 feet.
Correct.
Any other questions, or does anyone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
All right. There's a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All right, we'll do the roll call vote. If you in agreement, say aye.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Bannerman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. Division of Plant Engineering has four items for your consideration this morning. I would request that we bring you the Transportation Alternatives Program and the STIP revisions, and I will handle both of those and then we'll move on right away. Efficiency, that way I'm not getting up and down. That being said, attachment number six is a request for your concurrence on the Transportation Alternatives Program projects that were identified by local communities and reviewed by the Advisory Council. As we did last year, we provided you approximately 4 pages of information of how the program works. The very last page of that attachment should provide you the recommendations, which is a spreadsheet. Should look really similar to this, if you're looking for it. With that, the department would recommend moving forward with 2 projects in the large community transportation alternatives program classification, which are Aberdeen and Piedmont, and in the small community category. Real quick, Sioux Tribe, Custer, and Armor are the 3 projects that were identified. We do request your concurrence.
Had left the conference.
Hello?
Nope, we're still here. Somebody else dropped off. I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. We'll do a roll call vote. All in favor say aye. Kelly?
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Bannerman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson? Aye. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I would ask we turn your attention to attachment number 8, which are STIP revisions. For this month, we have 9 revisions that we're requesting your consideration on. First of which is number 26. We have a newly identified need in Sioux Falls area for some payment preservation projects, and that project would be added to fiscal year 2017 for construction this summer. Item number 28
has left the conference.
Item number 28 is a grant that we did receive through Federal Highway Administration for an innovation exchange. The intent of this project is to provide staff the opportunity to visit with Wyoming DOT and Utah DOT. Regards to some innovative things that they've been doing in their state. Wyoming has made some great progress on project scheduling, project delivery. They also have some very interesting intersection improvements they've been doing in Wyoming. So we have a list of innovations we want to visit with Wyoming about, along with Utah. And again, it's an information exchange, trying to get some ideas that they've used and seeing how they work in their state and hopefully bring them back to South Dakota. Number 29, 30, 31, 32 and 36 are rail crossing improvement projects. Number 29 is a rail crossing improvement project in Sioux Falls and Brandon, 3 in Sioux Falls, 1 in Brandon. Number 30 is a rail crossing improvement in Rapid City. 31 is Sturgis and Oryx. Number 32 is a Pier 4 Pier area. Number 33 includes Brookings, Volga, Summit, Aberdeen, and Will Lake. With the rail crossing improvements, our inspections usually take place late summer, early fall. So by the time that we can run through the information, coordinate with the communities, this is the time when we bring these revisions to you for consideration. Number 35 is an intersection improvement just on the west side of Yankton. We are asking to move that project back to 2018. Number 36, again, is another rail crossing improvement in Yankton, Canton, and Mitchell, Garrison, and Del Rapids. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would request consideration of all revisions, if possible. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
If they have any questions? Not? Does somebody want to make a motion?
I'd move approval of the revisions.
All right. Kyle moves. Rod seconds. We'll do a roll call vote, Kelly, and all in favor say aye.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Bannerman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, I do have 9 additional informational revisions that are included in your handout. If there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to attempt to answer those. If not, I'll turn it over to Mr. Gingler with the right-of-way items.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
16. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. I have six items on the agenda, and I would like to address the first two items individually, and then the remainder, if you would like to combine those, that would be a way to get through this. The first item on the agenda is a transfer of the property interest. This would complete a portion of an agreement between the department and the city of Sioux Falls for highways within the city's boundaries, and this particular segment is along Highway 42. Along the west side, it's from South Sycamore to the east side of 6 Mile Road, and as part of a larger agreement, we are working on additional transfers to finish out the agreement between the two parties, and the staff recommendation is to approve the transfer.
Any questions, or does someone want to make a motion?
I'll move the transfer.
Okay. Kim moves. We have a second?
Second.
All right, Ron, second.
Question? Can you say you're working out the details? I assume that involves some numbers?
No, sir. It has to do with what we've got for recoverable instruments that record the properties.
So they're just making it no monetary exchange on this or nothing?
That's been taken care of several years ago in the agreement. This is to transfer the property interests to go along with the jurisdiction and maintenance of those routes. We have some of the rights of way that are back in the 1920s and coming forward, and some of those legal documents for the property interests are quite elusive.
Any other discussion or questions? All right, we'll do the roll call vote. Please respond with aye in favor.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vanderman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay. Item two is an abandonment request in Turner County, and this is used to be a roadside park easement. We had a concerted effort back around starting in 2005, and we had thought concluded in 2008, and we found a straggler, and there's no longer any operation as a roadside park, and the staff recommendation is to abandon any interests that they have in the roadside park easement for this parcel.
Make a motion.
So I'll move.
Okay. Rod moves. You have a second?
Second.
All right. Tom second. Any discussion on this one?
I have a question.
Yes.
Is this already all kind of taken care of reclaiming back, or is there, would there be cost incurred to?
I think there are all the improvements that were there except for that cut across there are removed. As far as like if there's picnic benches or outhouses and that type of thing, it has not functioned as a roadside park for quite some time.
Thank you.
All right, we'll do a roll call vote. In favor, say aye.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Toby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Hammond?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Thank you. Items 3 through 6 involve abandonments of temporary easements that were placed against the properties of these highway segments for construction purposes. The construction has been completed, and it is now the time to relieve those temporary easements as filed upon the title of those properties. The staff recommendation is to abandon the temporary easements by resolution for items 3, 4, 5, and 6. And I would propose that we could handle these in one motion unless you would like to serve them individually.
Somebody want to make a motion on 3, 4, 5, and 6?
I join them as a group.
Site. All right. do a roll call vote. All in favor say aye.
Hoberg?
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Toby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vandeman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right. Bid awards. Sam, are you going to do that or?
Good morning, Chairman, members of the Commission. We've had two bid openings since the last time we met. I'll start with the January 18th bid opening. Consisted of eight contracts involving 12 projects. 29 bids were received. The low bids totaled $33,489,559, which was $3,939,567. Or 10.5% below our engineer's estimate of $37,429,000. We've completed our bid analysis of the projects in the January 18th bid opening, and we just have one recommendation involving all projects. Projects 1 and 4 were within 10% of our engineer's estimate. Projects 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, and 8 were all more than 10% below our estimate. Therefore, we're recommending approval of all projects in this bid opening.
Do we have a motion?
I'll move.
Mark will make a motion.
Okay. So we'll have Mark Court motion and Ron second. All in favor, say.
I have a question.
Okay. Sorry, Kim.
And 3, I think it is. It looks like that Moose Electric wasn't actually the lowest bid.
Yeah, projects 3 and 4 were let in combination. So if you
right.
bid, yeah, you bid one contract, you had to bid both.
Yep, that's right. I did read that and I went back. Sorry.
Okay.
Any other discussion or questions? If not, we'll do the roll call vote. All in favor say aye.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Vandeman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye. Motion carries.
Okay, I'll go on to the January 25th bid opening. January 25th bid opening consisted of 5 contracts involving 6 projects. 19 bids were received. Low bids totaled $19,793,872, which was $1,639,000 or 9% above our engineer's estimate of $18,154,778. Start out with a recommendation for projects 1 and 2. TNR Contracting was the Aztec low bidder, but 4 bids received on each contract. The low bid for project 1 was $14,714,000, which was $2,141,000 or 17% above our estimate of $12,572,980. This project consists of reconstructing a portion of South Dakota 37, which is Burr Street and Mitchell, right there where it intersects I-90, both to the north and south. The low bid for project 2 was $1,019,756, which was $250,788 or 19.7% below the engineer's estimate of $1,270,544. There's a bid analysis process. It has been determined that certain items of work for project number 1 could have been estimated at a moderately higher price, considering the duration of the project being 2+ years and the construction phase and restrictions associated with the traffic control. Considering the fact that we could have had certain items estimated at a higher price and the 4 bids we did receive, the combination low bid is considered reasonable for the work being completed. Therefore, we're recommending approval of the award of these contracts pending the required good faith effort documentation.
And when you say you're recommending approval of, are you just talking about the first one right now? Or?
No, I'd recommend approval of both projects, one and
one
two.
And two. Okay. Yeah. Does somebody want to make a motion on one and two?
So move.
Okay. Second. Okay, Kyle moves. Okay, second. Any other discussion on this? Not. So we'll do a roll call vote. All in favor say aye.
Fulbert?
Aye.
Marfart?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Hanneman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Motion carries. I'm going to take us to project number three, the Rumble Strip project throughout the Mitchell region. Surface preparation technologies with the Aztec low bidder of two bids received for this project with a bid of $202,558, which was $82,384 or 28.9%. below the engineer's estimate of $284,942. Considering the excellent bid price received, we're recommending approval of the award of this contract.
Move approval.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Question. Why did we get such a good deal, as it appears?
Well, we have talked with the low bidder in this case. And what we're doing here is the rumble strips we're placing for the most part on this project are somewhat unique to what we've done in the past. They're more of a continuous wave type rumble strip, so it's a little different specification than what we're used to. It's called a sinusoidal rumble strip, where it's supposed to be quieter for the people outside of the vehicle and then just as effective for the folks inside the vehicle. And so our contractors at least aren't real familiar with working with us in this situation. Minnesota has been practicing this for a couple of years now, and surface preparation technologies, in conversation with them, they said they're beginning to be more comfortable with the process and with the specifications, and therefore their bid prices are reflective of that. They're more confident in what they're going to be able to do and meeting our specs and whatnot. So,
and I'll say the obvious, as we learn,
right,
to be able to estimate more accurately.
That's, and for us too, exactly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we have leaned on Minnesota for prices, for what they've seen for prices and whatnot, and we do feel this is an excellent price, so, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we had a motion and a second on that one, so... all in favor say aye. We'll do the roll call vote.
Colbert?
Aye.
Marfart?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Hanneman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Okay, that'll take us to project number four. Wanzac Construction was the Aztec low bidder. Four bids received for this project with a bid of $3,541,910. Which was $201,683 or 5.4% below the engineer's estimate of $3,743,594. This project was previously bid in October of 2015 and again in December of 2015, with both attempts at bidding it, resulting in the bids being rejected due to limited bidding competition and higher than anticipated bid prices. The low bid currently being considered is much lower, and the bidding competition has improved since previous attempts at letting this contract in 2015. We are recommending approval of the award of the contract.
Move to approve.
Okay, Ron moves. Do you have a second?
Second.
All right. Any seconds it? Any discussion? Favor say aye, and we'll do a roll call vote.
Fulbert?
Aye.
Marfart?
Aye.
Roby?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Hanneman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Motion carried. Last project in that bid opening was project number five. Once again, Wanzac Construction was the Aztec low bidder of five bids received with a bid of $315,647,000. Which was $32,929 or 11.6% above our estimate of $282,717. This project consisted of a structure replacement on 7th Street in Redfield over Turtle Creek. Although the bid was moderately higher than we anticipated, we do feel the low bid price is justifiable for the work being completed, and we're recommending approval of the award of this contract.
All right, we have a motion. All right, Kim.
Second.
Okay, Rob Pickens. Any discussion? All right, all in favor say aye. We'll do a roll call vote.
Over.
Aye.
Eckhart?
Aye.
Cody?
Aye.
Rosenblum?
Aye.
Cameron?
Aye.
Wright?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just a comment about Mr. Weisgren's performance that may need to be reviewed here. We've been on a very long streak that each of our bid lettings, if you look at the bottom of each estimate, has exceeded the low bid amount by a substantial. Until this most recent I'm not sure what needs to be reviewed in your office.
There's an outlier in there.
We'll need to talk about that later. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. I think all that's left then is election of officers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Before we get into the election of officers, I wanted to let everybody know that this will be my last commission meeting. I had informed the governor a few months ago that just due to my responsibility vantage point and the fact that I missed 30 or 40% of the meetings the way it is, I said you can probably find somebody better. Although I've really enjoyed being on the commission. We've worked with a lot of great commissioners, met a lot of great people. It's a great staff, and Mr. Secretary here make our job pretty easy. So. Been a great time, but it sounds as though there's some great options that the governor's identified, and so I told him that I would be resigning after this meeting. So, as we're electing officers, I'm not going to be one of the options.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you're finding that chair was short, but very well.
I'm glad you referenced it. This didn't just come up today, so it didn't appear that you took Mr. Owen's comments to heart. Reevaluated your decision.
It also has nothing to do with IM-22,
yeah.
Or, you know.
And I'm not sure I agree with you that we can find anybody better. It has been a pleasure to work with you. I hate to see you go. Our numbers seem to be dwindling here, and anytime we lose a good commissioner who's shown the interest in what we do as a department, what the commission does, and has built the knowledge that's certainly lost for the commission. So I wish you the best. And particularly if you find yourself short of a certain employee at some point down the road.
I hope so.
Yeah,
he's busy.
Yeah. And the chairman, and I do appreciate that, did give me a heads up ahead of the meeting that he would be making that announcement because it does impact my recommendations to you in terms of election of officers, and I have two recommendations for you. The commission's tradition has been for as long as I've been with the commission that officers are done based on seniority, and then the exception to that would be for those who have not had the opportunity to serve as chair and vice chair. So based on that, I went through the six of you that left. Commissioner Fulbert, Commissioner Roby, and Commissioner Marquardt have all previously served as chairman. So out of the three that have not, and looking at longevity, Commissioner Rosenblum was appointed in 2014. So it would be my recommendation that he be elected as commission chair. It was a very close race for second, but Commissioner White was appointed in May of 2015 and Commissioner Vandlin in June of that year. So it would be my recommendation that Commissioner White be chosen as vice chair for the committee. And another part of my recommendation, just something for you to think about. Historically, we have changed officers at the July meeting. Given what we're discussing today, I think we might want to consider changing that and going to new officers after the first of the year each year. And so assuming you agreed with my recommendation
Chairman Rosenblum and then serve for this calendar year, and then January of next year, Vice Chair White would become chair and we would appoint a new vice chair. So, Mr. Chairman, that would be my recommendation.
So we do two separate motions then for the change of date and then also for the officers. So as far as changing of the date, so that we would start beginning of the year, you'd serve a full calendar year. Does somebody want to make a motion that we would make that change?
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Second. Okay. Question? Why wasn't July to July anyway? No rationale, just kind of the way it was. There's no reason for it to be that way, really?
Commissioner, none that I'm aware of. It's been that way as far back as I can remember.
I think it matched like the budget cycle or something.
Yeah, state fiscal year.
Okay, so motion is made by Don and seconded by Rod to change the election of officers to January of every year. Do we have any other discussion on that? If not, we'll do a roll call vote. In favor, say aye.
Aye. Well, I'm first.
Mark first, aye, yes. Roby?
Aye.
Rosenblum?
Aye.
Vanman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye. And then about a motion for Rosenblum to be the new chairman and White to be the vice chairman.
So move.
Second.
Staying on that. That seems like a conflict. Now we got to read that whole thing.
Well, you actually make a good point there, though. We'll have to do it separately. Do we have a quorum here still?
Oh, that is a good point.
We do it throughout.
Okay, but
your point is
four. Yeah.
If they abstain, we'll have to do them separately.
Let's just do them separately. That way each can abstain from that.
Okay. Right. Yep, let's do that. So we'll start with Rosenblum as the chairman. We'll keep the same motion in the second, or do you guys want
to? I'll revise my motion, the motion to approve Ron as chairman.
Okay. And second to that?
Second.
Rod. Okay. Do a roll call vote. All in favor of Rosenblum being the chairman? Say aye when we do the roll call.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Obi?
Aye.
Rosenblum?
Same.
Vanman?
Aye.
White?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
I'll make a motion that Kyle White is vice chairman.
All right. Want to second that?
Second.
Okay. Again, roll call vote. In favor, say aye.
Over.
Aye.
Marquardt?
Aye.
Obi?
Aye.
Rosenblum?
Aye.
Vanman?
Aye.
White?
Same.
Thompson?
Aye. Motion carries. Any other business for the commission?
We do need to request the commission go into executive session to discuss pending legal issues and legal counsel. We'll need to disconnect the phone.
Are you anticipating action taken?
No.